Good day, and welcome to the fourth quarter 2014 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, VP of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Jasmin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2014 fourth quarter earnings conference call. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alain-Pierre Renaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind you that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described in our financial documents and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis, and thank you all for joining us today. 2014 was a year of progress on our strategic plan. Let me provide some quick highlights that I will elaborate on during my talk today. In summary, we significantly grew, retooled, and strengthened the engineering construction business with the acquisition of Kemps, our restructuring, SG&A reductions, and system enhancements. We continued to improve our corporate social responsibility program with excellence in ethics and compliance, health and safety, environment, and other key areas. We successfully completed the first phase of our planned monetization of mature ICI assets, including the highly successful sale of AltaLink. We completed recruiting of our senior executive team, with top talent now in place in every one of our 11 business units. Regarding Kemps, this acquisition, completed in August, transformed our oil and gas capabilities into a Tier 1 peer group position and has the potential to deploy the Kemps high-end construction capability to other business units. We have since completed our 100-day integration program, which generated approximately 70 million in synergies, 20 million more than originally forecasted. Despite the recent downturn in the oil and gas sector, Kemps continues to deliver value with a stable backlog and important new contracts in Iraq, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. Further, the Kemps combination enhances our already strong position in the Middle East to make us one of the largest, if not the largest, Western firm in the region. With 8,000 employees overall and thousands of additional contract resources, combined with strong local content in both our leadership and staff, we have market-leading capabilities. Having been in the region just a few weeks ago, I can attest that opportunities abound even with today's oil prices. The combination also significantly bolsters our strength in Australia and the growing Southeast Africa region and adds new skills to help us in the Americas. In addition, this may push us to the $10 billion revenue mark this year with more than 40,000 employees. As our integrated one-company approach takes root, we're seeing greater cross-company synergies at SNC-Lavalin on both the revenue and cost side. This, coupled with our enhanced account management program, should pay dividends as we move further through the sales cycle later this year. During the year, we also substantially rebalanced our ICI portfolio. In Q4, we finalized the sale of our interest in Astoria Project Partners. And as mentioned, we closed on the sale of our 100% equity stake in AltaLink to Berkshire Hathaway Energy. We'll continue to be active in the ICI space and see a growing list of new opportunities for project investment to support the E&C business. We're also making good progress on the process for the potential sale of Highway 407 this year. We are proud of the strategic achievements that will enable us to pursue growth opportunities in an efficient manner. On the other hand, persistent challenges on certain projects and softening global economic and end market conditions have slowed our financial progress. As a result, in November, we took action on a plan to realign and restructure the organization in ways that will enhance our agility and improve our ability to address the needs of our clients. In the fourth quarter of 2014, we made significant progress on this plan, recording more than $260 million, or nearly 90% of the total charges that we expect to record over the plan's life. All of these improvements continue to strengthen our excellent position to compete for and win significant projects. They're aligned with our rigorous risk management standards, and we remain optimistic about our long-term E&C operational performance. Our enhanced proposal review and approval process and more efficient cost controls have also put us in a much better position to deliver outstanding projects. To name just a few recent wins, Our oil and gas group signed a project management contract agreement in Iraq with one of the world's leading international oil companies. The agreement, which is for a three-year term, has a potential value that could exceed $100 million and was facilitated by the combined power of the SNC-Lavalin and Kent's organizations coming together. In Qatar, our oil and gas group was also awarded a four-year multi-million-dollar call-off contract with a possible two-year extension by Qatar Shell for its Pearl GTL onshore and offshore facilities. With our partner industry, our O&M group is now providing operation maintenance services for the new McGill University Health Center's Glenside Hospital Complex in Montreal for the next 30 years. This is following the receipt of a substantial completion certificate for the project in Q4. Our team provide the design, construction, and financing for this project. Before I turn to our results, I'd like to address the recent charges by the Public Prosecution Service of Canada. These charges are related to alleged reprehensible deeds in Libya by former employees who left the company long ago. The Libya issue has been publicly known and disclosed by the company 3 years ago. Note that SNC-Lavalin was recognized as a victim in Swiss proceedings against one of these employees, and we received certain amounts of money. Also note that these charges are not related to the MUHC investigation. SNC-Lavalin has not been charged in this investigation, and the charges against individuals in this case also identify SNC-Lavalin as a potential victim. We agree that any individuals who broke the law should be brought to justice. We will continue to fully cooperate with the authorities in this regard, and we will consider claims against any such individuals to recover damages the company has suffered. To the extent charges are appropriate, we believe that they would be correctly applied against the individuals in question and not the company. In this context, and in the interest of our employees, families, partners, clients, investors, and stakeholders, we have no choice but to aggressively contest the charges. We have always been and remain willing to reach a reasonable and fair solution which promotes accountability while protecting the innocent. In the meantime, we look forward to continuing our constructive and cooperative relationship with the authorities. I want to stress that with these charges, there is no change to our right and ability to bid or work on any public or private projects. As noted over the past few years, we have taken significant actions to reform our ethics and compliance program with the ongoing objective of becoming a benchmark in the industry. The tone from the top is clear and unequivocal. There is zero tolerance for ethics infractions at SNC-Lavalin, and we have industry-leading standards to judge them by. SNC-Lavalin is committed to Quebec and Canada. We're proud to be a national champion, and we think Canada should be proud of the company and its commitment to become both an ethics leader and a Tier 1 global competitor. We'll continue to work towards resolution of this issue in the interest of all of our stakeholders. Now, moving on to our results. Earnings for the year were $1.3 billion compared to $36 million in 2013. This increase was mainly due to a net gain on disposal of AltaLink. The company reported an adjusted net income from ENC for the year of $55 million compared to an adjusted net loss of $134 million for the year of 2013. ICI, excluding the gains on disposal, continued to perform well. We have a strong balance sheet. Our cash position was $1.7 billion at year-end and is expected to remain in a comfortable position following a large tax payment due in Q1 2015 on the AltaLink sale. Our equity increased by 62% in the year and now stands at $3.3 billion. Our revenue backlog totaled $12.3 billion, an increase of 49% since the beginning of the year, which mainly reflects the acquisition of Kent's. Alain Pierre will discuss the numbers in more detail shortly. Moving now to our segment review. We believe our oil and gas subsegment is going to be a driver of our future growth and a main contributor to 2015 net income. I've already reviewed a few recent wins that have stemmed from our fully integrated solution. While we would all rather have high oil prices, in the near term, the position of the oil and gas backlog is stable with potential for improvement. This is helped by the following factors. Synergies with the combined enterprise, a strong role in sustaining capital, which is relatively more secure in a downturn, a position on key large projects, which are in a must-complete phase, a commanding presence in resilient geographies like the Middle East, and an outstanding industry reputation. In mining and metallurgy, our end-to-end project solution offering coupled with our strong fertilizer position has somewhat insulated us from market cyclicality. We continue to believe that recovery in this market will take some time, likely until at least late next year. That said, we're seeing some optimism as the aluminum market begins to recover, coupled with the view by many that we are the global number one player in this market. Additionally, other commodities are forecast to work off their capacity overhang toward the end of the decade, and due to development lead times, producers will need to begin to respond soon to meet any supply gaps. The environment and water subsegment continues to be challenging. We have bolstered management in 2014 to enhance our ability to deliver in the future. We don't expect a recovery of this market until the general commodity markets show renewed strength. The power segment remains strong, and we expect power to be a significant contributor to 2015 net income due to the strength of our backlog and opportunities. For many years, we have been part of the integrated engineering team for BC Hydro's Site C, which is the province's largest active hydro development. And we were pleased to see the project receive government sanction at the end of 2014. We celebrated the successful energization of the Heartland transmission line for AltaLink at the end of 2014, and our new T&D team will deliver on numerous projects in 2015, including the West Alberta Transmission Project, and they're actively pursuing opportunities with our key T&D clients. In our nuclear sector, our services-based business is going well, and our potential new build opportunities in China, Argentina, Romania, and the UK continue to make forward progress. We remain hopeful that a number of our project wins in our thermal group in 2014 are given the final project sanction this year. In infrastructure and construction, we are improving profitability levels with negative EBIT decreasing versus last year. We've made major additions to our executive team in this area and are increasingly confident of our project delivery and risk management approach. This group has recently been awarded two district cooling contracts in Saudi Arabia and continue to see a very large near and medium-term bid list in Canada with some key decisions due in the first half of this year. Given project ramp-up lead times, meaningful contributions from any wins this year will be realized in 2016 and beyond. Operations and maintenance EBIT decreased versus last year, but we are encouraged by the increasing demand for projects using a public-private partnership concession model. We've already more than replaced the marginal EBIT backlog from the phase-out of the public works contract and are expecting an overall improvement this year. Finally, as you read in our press release, we have decided to provide you with more precise guidance on our E&C core business. Therefore, for 2015, we are targeting an adjusted EPS from E&C in the range of $1.30 to $1.60. In conclusion, I want to personally thank all of our SNC-Lavalin clients for their support and our employees for their hard work and diligence. With more flexible and agile operations, we will improve our competitive positioning and deliver even better services to clients, long-term value for our stakeholders, and opportunities for our team. While market conditions remain challenging in 2015, we'll execute on our focused strategy and advance our plan to become a global Tier 1 E&C firm. With that, I'll pass the call over to Len Pierre to discuss our Q4 and 2014 results in more detail. Len Pierre?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, everyone. In 2014, we achieved significant milestones in our five-year strategic plan. We have completed and integrated the landmark acquisition of Kemps, executed our restructuring and right-sizing plan, rebalanced our ICI portfolio with disposal of AltaLink, Astoria Innovation, and increased efficiencies through SG&A reduction. The company has a very strong balance sheet. Our cash position is strong, $1.7 billion. Our debt-to-equity ratio is low, 0.09, and our debt rating remains strong at BBB. We also have a strong revenue backlog, which stood at $12.3 billion at the end of December 2014. I will start my presentation on slide 6. Revenues for the year were $8.2 billion compared to $7.9 billion for 2013, principally due to increases in services, packages, and ICI, mainly due to the incremental services and packages revenue from Kent, which we acquired on August 22, 2014. The gross margin amount for the year was $1.3 billion compared to $1.1 for 2013, representing gross margin to revenue ratios of 16% and 40% respectively. Note that the 2014 gross margin includes about $140 million of charges relating to the restructuring and right-sizing plan announcements of last November. Excluding the charges, the gross margin of 2014 was 18%, 1.8. SG&A expenses for the year totaled $841 million, in line with 2013, despite the incremental SG&A expenses of $68 million in connection with the Kemps acquisition. This decrease, $63 million without Kemps, is mainly attributable to cost savings resulting from the company's restructuring plan implemented in the second half of 2013 and the company's effort to contain this cost under its value-add program. The consolidated EBIT percentage was 6% for the year 2014 and -1% for the fourth quarter 2014. If we exclude the 140 million of charges just mentioned, the EBIT percentage is actually 8% and 4% for the year 2014 and the fourth quarter 2014 respectively. We also completed two ICI sales in the fourth quarter of 2014, being Alton Inc. and Astoria, for a total net gain of $1.6 billion. In the fourth quarter of 2014, we recorded $123 million of restructuring costs, goodwill, and investment impairments. These charges relate to the restructuring and right-sizing plan announcements of last November. If you add this amount to the $140 million included in the gross margin, it means we have recorded $263 million out of our $300 million announced plan so far. The difference should be recorded in the next 14 months. In the fourth quarter 2014, we also recorded $7 million of acquisition-related and integration costs, bringing the year-to-date total to $63 million for these costs. Note that we have successfully completed our 100-day Kent integration program, which generated $70 million in synergies, $20 million more than originally forecasted. During the quarter, we also adjust our preliminary purchase price allocation for the Kent acquisition. The preliminary intangible assets amount totals $320 million, which will be amortized on a straight-line basis for up to 7 years, depending on each of the underlying items. We recorded $37 million for the year 2014 and expect to record approximately $85 million or $65 million after tax in 2015. Note that these amounts may vary depending on the U.S. exchange rate. Lastly, on this slide, we see that net income for 2014 was $1.3 billion compared to $36 billion in 2013. Turning to slide 7, please. This slide shows that once we remove the non-core items, the adjusted consolidated net income in 2014 was $374 million compared to $112 million in 2013. The adjusted net income from E&C was $55 million in 2014 compared to an adjusted net loss of $134 million in 2013, mainly due to a lower negative EBIT in the infrastructure segment and an increased EBIT in the AEW segment, mainly due to the oil and gas subsegment, and a lower EBIT in the power segment. The adjusted net income from ICI was $319 million in 2014 compared to $245 million in 2013, mainly due to higher net income from AutoLink and higher dividends received from IWA47, partially offset by a lower net income from SKH. Slide 8. Slide 8 presents revenue by segment. As we can see, the AOW Group revenues increased, now representing 35% of total revenues due to the Kent acquisition. AOW revenues should continue to grow in 2015 as Kent revenue only represented 19 weeks in 2014. Slide 9 presents revenue by geographic areas. We can see from that slide that acquiring camps allow us to have a greater geographical diversity, decreasing the percentage of revenue from Canada and increasing our international presence, particularly in the Middle East and Asia-Pacific region. Turning to slide 10, please. Services gross margin decreased in 2014 compared to 2013, mainly due to charges relating to the restructuring and right-sizing plan. In addition, the decrease in the services gross margin to revenue ratio in 2014 compared to 2013 reflects a change in the mix of revenue generated from certain Kent activity, such as field services, which are cost reimbursable contracts, and accordingly generate a lower gross margin to revenue ratio. Gross margin for packages increased in 2014 compared to 2013, principally due to a favorable variance in the gross margin to revenue ratio in infrastructures, as well as a higher gross margin in AEOW, partially offset by a lower volume of activity in power. The gross margin to revenue ratio in infrastructure was primarily attributable to reversals in 2014 of non-cash provision on a North African project, as well as less unfavorable cost pre-forecasts, losses, and provision in 2014 compared to 2013. The higher gross margin in AEW was mainly due to the incremental gross margin from camps, partially offset by a lower volume of activity in mining and metallurgy. The increase in gross margin amount from ICI is mainly due to a higher gross margin from AutoLink, partially offset by a lower contribution from SKH. Now, turning to slide 11, please. SG&A expenses for the year total $841 million, in line with 2013, despite the incremental SG&A expenses of $68 million in connection with the Kent acquisition. SG&A expenses, excluding Kent, decrease every quarter, except in the third, as we have succeeded in stabilizing these expenses. As mentioned earlier, this decrease is mainly attributable to cost savings resulting from the company's restructuring plan implemented in 2013 and the company's effort to contain these costs under its value-add program. Now, turning to slide 12. Net financial expenses increased to $220 million in 2014 compared to $151 million in 2013. Net financial expenses from ICI increased by $50 million. Mainly due to higher interest expense on additional non-recourse debt, mainly related to the AltaLink and Empower BC General Partnership. Net financial expenses from ENC increased by $19 million, mainly resulting from cost of $37 million related to the temporary additional financing for the acquisition of CAMPS and the incremental cost of the unsecured revolving credit agreement entered into in December 2013, partially offset by net foreign exchange gain in 2014. Slide 13 now. Slide 13 presents the EBIT and adjusted EBIT by segment for better comparison. The adjusted segment EBIT represents the segment EBIT less the gains on disposal of ICI, the $140 million charge mentioned earlier relating to the restructuring and right-sizing plan announcement of last November, as well as the impairment of investment of $29 million. Which per IFRS has to be recorded in the segmented EBIT. As you can see, the infrastructure and construction and environment and water sectors remain challenging. First, legacy fixed price contract negatively impacted the infrastructures and construction 2014 adjusted segment EBIT by a net amount of $112 million. This negative impact was partially offset by a net favorable impact of $35 million following a risk provision reversal on Libya. Second, the 2014 negative segment EBIT from environment and water resulted mainly from insufficient gross margin to cover its SG&A expenses. Third, also note that power had a lower segment EBIT. This decrease is mainly due to a lower volume of activity, primarily in package due to the end of important projects with AltaLink and in nuclear, partially offset by a less unfavorable impact from additional reserves and cost reforecast. Fourth, lastly, note that $111 million of EBIT from Cairns was recorded in the oil and gas segment for the period of August 22nd to December 31st, 2014. Now, turning to slide 14, please. Revenue backlog totaled $12.3 billion at the end of December 2014. This is slightly lower than September 2014, but 49% higher than December 2013. The increase is due to the services and package revenue backlog, which grew largely due to the addition of Kent's revenue backlog, partially offset by a decrease in OEM. The next slide, slide 15, shows our financial position. We can see that our cash and cash equivalents totaled $1.7 billion as at December 31st, which is $600 million higher than at the end of December 2013. But note that $238 million of income taxes on the gain of disposal of AutoLink has not yet been paid. It is expected to be paid in the first quarter for 2015. I also want to bring to your attention to the lines goodwill related to Kent's acquisition and intangible assets related to Kent's acquisition. As mentioned earlier, during the quarter, we adjust our preliminary purchase price allocation for the Kent's acquisition and have identified the intangible assets, which amount to $301 million as of December 31st, 2014. The purchase price allocation is preliminary and will only be considered as definitive in the third quarter of 2015. Also in December, following the disposition of HotelLink, the company repaid in full the outstanding balance of its acquisition credit facility, as well as the outstanding balance of the non-recourse debt related to the financing of the company's equity contribution in HotelLink. Therefore, the only debt left on the balance sheet is our 10-year debentures of $349 million and $531 million of non-recourse debt, mainly relating to the Okanagan Lake and Empower BC concessions. The company also has access to a credit facility totaling $4.25 billion that may be used for the insurance of performance and financial letters of credit, as well as cash flows, which are capped at $1.8 billion and not used right now. In summary, we have a strong balance sheet with a strong cash position, a low recourse debt to equity ratio, 0.09, good credit facility, and a strong triple B credit rating. Slide 16 now. Slide 16 summarized the cash flow variation for the year. The most significant variation were the cash flow from the proceeds of the HotelLink sale and the cash outflow from the acquisition of Cairns. Now, turning to slide 17. We have decided to change the metrics on which the guidance is based to help you better evaluate our core E&C earnings. The company is targeting an adjusted EPS from E&C for 2015 of $1.30 to $1.60. The adjusted EPS from E&C exclude charges related to the restructuring and rightsizing plan, which are expected to be approximately $60 million after taxes, as well as the amortization of intangible assets and acquisition and integration cost incurred in connection with the acquisition of Cairns, which is expected to be approximately $65 million after tax next year. This year, sorry. This concludes my part of the presentation. We can now open the line of questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you have signaled for a question prior to hearing these instructions on today's call, please repeat the process now by pressing star 1 again to ensure our equipment has captured your signal. We will now pause for a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for a question. We will now take our first question from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Wondering if you can help us reconcile the outlook for F-15 at $1.30 to $1.60. Just wondering, what are the base assumptions there? Is it continuous current level of backlog, or are there other pressured contracts that are expected, you know, that have been bid, not problem maybe, but lower margin? If you could just give us a little bit more detail on where the guidance is coming from.
Well, Sarah, this is Bob. The guidance is, of course, the combination of everything that we see out there. So maybe if you could be a little bit more specific and help us on what you're probing at, whether it's project
sure.
performance or market or...
Let's maybe start with revenue in terms of current backlog prospects. Has there been any major change from Q4 going into Q1 and Q2? It sounds like not for Kent, but maybe on the legacy S&C business.
Let's say, in terms of backlog, what we anticipate for next year, at least for the first part of the year, is a possible increase in our backlog. As you know, our portfolio of projects in the pipeline is huge, and we hope to be capable to win a certain number of important projects during this first part of the year. So we don't anticipate any decrease in our backlog. But we don't embed it in our forecast and in our guidance a potential significant progress in our backlog. So we are, let's say, stable in the range of $12.5 billion for next year.
Okay.
Please.
So I was just on the margin front then, are you expecting any significant change to gross margin on the core E&C business? Both in services and packages.
If you are referring to the adjusted gross margin, let's say, after elimination of the provision for restructuring and right-sizing plan, we consider that the gross margin will regularly improve over the year. Yeah.
Sorry, that it will improve. That it will improve in F15.
It's why we compare to 2014, we fix the guidance between 1.3 and 1.6.
Okay. And then maybe, Bob, just on the capital allocation question, you know, given the charges that have been laid against SNC, it sounds like you're still on route to sell 407 this year. Just wondering, can you comment on, you know, use of proceeds? Has anything changed in the strategy in terms of redeploying that into ENC, or are you thinking about things a little differently now?
Well, there's been no fundamental change, Sarah. As we've said before, we're always looking at all options to regarding shareholder value and the long-term interest of the company. So we're constantly assessing the landscape for all of that, and we'll make appropriate decisions. So we certainly recognize we have a robust cash position.
Okay, and when the comment in the MD&A about near-term sale, what can you qualify what that means?
Well, as I said in my statement, this year, so, you know, last year we were saying the early part of midterm, and now we're saying this year is our plan. You don't have to see how everything works out, but that's what we're gearing toward. And as I've mentioned before, it's a complicated process to extract full value from. Our team is doing a great job on it, and I think the approach we've taken so far is very good. So I'm quite pleased with how that's rolling out. We have a few more I's to dot and T's to cross, and then we'll be back with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Michael Tupholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just to follow up on the 407, Bob, is the process and the timing at all dependent on how the underlying ENC business progresses and turns around?
Well, that's certainly one. As I've mentioned, the factors that we consider is one is market timing for the sale, which still looks attractive, and we're viewing it as going to be attractive in for the next several months or longer. We look at the health and stability of the ENC business and the challenges confronting it. And we look at use of proceeds and the various impacts of it on our income statement and balance sheet. So we take all those together, and our current view is this year looks like the target for creating a transaction.
Okay. Next question is regarding Kent. So solid performance again in the fourth quarter. And you did talk about this a little bit in your prepared remarks, but just wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the outlook there and how that may have changed, if at all, for that business over the course of this year and also in terms of its new awards prospects since, I guess, we last talked on your Q3 call.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, $100 oil is better than $50 oil any day of the week when you're in the oil and gas business. That said, our view to date is that what's happening with the reduction is more of a reduction of upside opportunity than creating downside on our estimate. So that's why we're saying that we see things pretty stable so far. You know, things could change in that market or the client behavior can change. But to date, we remain pretty confident of what we'll produce in 2015.
Okay, thanks. And then just lastly, in terms of the infrastructure and construction segment, there was mention of some additional costs on a mass transit project, and I don't recall that being an area that had been previously mentioned as a challenging legacy project area. So can you just clarify that and if possible, maybe provide a bit of a split between the mass transit costs versus, I guess, whatever was going through in terms of hospital-related costs?
Yes. So that project, I guess, Denis any guidance on
No, we never provide with guidance on project. What we can say is that as we have done and we explained that a lot of efforts to mitigate and put our risk under control in this sector's activities. We have new people now at the top of this BU infrastructure, and we are pretty confident that we are in a position to fix the issue and to deliver and to recover partially the delay on certain number of programs.
But on this one, I would just say this to me, this is in a very different category than the ones we've been talking about. We ran into a geotechnical issue on a project. It's an isolated issue, which appears to be remedied at this point. And we don't have a lack of confidence in either the management or the setup of the project, so it's we don't view it as a recovery effort.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Bert Powell from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Bob, just want to go back to the 407. Are you running an auction process for that? Is that still the plan to go out, or is there some gating issues before you can get there?
Well, 407 is a very challenging process to extract full value. You know, as you all know, we have partners and we have agreements that we're not privy to disclose between and among the partners. We have various options that we can exercise on our share, and our advisory team is fully engaged in developing the best solution through all of that, and we're quite pleased with where that's heading. So I'm not prepared to discuss where we might go with it, but just as with Ultimink, we're going to be looking for the greatest value creation solution, and I'm happy with the direction that's going.
Okay, that's perfect. And then I just want to come back to the guidance, and you know, Kent's certainly looked very strong this quarter with the EBIT. It looks like $80 million. If I just run rate that, and then there's a lot of assumptions that go into this, but if I look at the strength of Kent's against your guidance, it would almost be implying that the rest of the business is going to be break even or a loss. Is that how you structured the guidance? And then in thinking about the guidance, how much of the guidance is contemplated further negative developments on some of the legacy projects that have been issues for you so far?
If I may, first, you're right. We don't deliver guidance on Kent's particularly because Kent's will be merged in our oil and gas, so now we're fully part of the EMC. What we can say, as I mentioned previously, is that our gross margin, adjusted gross margin of any restructuring costs, which are not supposed to be repeated in 2015, will continue to grow. As I mentioned, G&A efforts will give a full effect on 2015, and we hope to continue the savings despite the Kent's absorption, as we already explained. And in terms of finance costs, the non-recourse interest paid on outstanding non-recourse debt will disappear out of our balance sheet. And remind you that we reimburse our bridge facility, means that our interest will dramatically decrease, except the one on our debentures. In terms of market and environment, as you know, we are facing headwinds in most of our sectors. Mining, we already comment, oil and gas, you just referred to, and some others. So we consider that the gross margin will continue to grow, and accompanied with the G&A efforts and the final cost decrease, we'll be capable to deliver the guidance.
Right.
But I think it's fair to say,
in all fairness, Kent's is a new business you're folding in, so we've got that business some visibility to it by itself. So if we assume that the backlog and the premise under which you acquired Kent's continues to hold, then looking at the guidance, it certainly is it's implied that the rest of the business is going to remain very challenged through 15. Or is that is not the case. That's kind of what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we said there's market headwinds. We still have, you know, well, the risk of the projects we're dealing with is way down. They still sit there. And as you read through what I said about the outlook, you know, infrastructure is going to be definitely a drag on earnings. I mean, the team is doing an outstanding job, and we're excited about the future. But what they're saddled with is going to be difficult to work off, and then we have some slow market conditions going in a couple of other sectors that we talked about. So that balances out. You know, when you put power on the strong upside and these on the strong downside, that's what you get out of it.
How much of it, Bob, is stuff that you're still struggling with from the past versus what has come into the books since you've been there scrubbing the new awards?
Well, I don't want to dwell on past versus current versus future, but I would just say that when you look at the big project cycle, it's about 4 years. The sales cycle tends to be about 18 months. It takes another year to get margin off of wins. So, you know, we're still into that cycle. Hopefully we're at the tail end of that cycle. But we're still well into that cycle.
So 16, you'll be clear of the tail end of that cycle, and we can start to see things pick up
16,
more materially.
We should be able to remove the downside aspects out of the system, you know, nearly completely for 16. Then we have the replacement with the upside. And our modeling suggests that won't be fully complete, but the drag on the downside should be largely taken care of.
All right. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Yuri Link from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I didn't see it if it was in the presentation, but the legacy backlog, I think it was down to about $500 million. Last quarter, where does that stand today?
I think what's important, I don't know that we have today, but what's important is to is there's margin in the backlog and there's backlog. So I don't know if Len Pierre, you want to comment, but remember we have a fair bit of low margin work, like the public works contract and the and work for AltaLink that's coming off of the backlog that does not have a material effect on our profitability.
Now, let's say the what so-called legacy project represents about 3% of our backlog at December 31st, and mainly one Canadian hospital project, which will last till over the next 18 months, no more.
Yeah, he was also asking Lynn Pierre about the decrease in the non-Kent's backlog as well.
The non-Kent's backlog is due to, let's say, the end of a certain number of important projects, mainly in power, nuclear, and mining. At this moment, it's true that our book-to-bill ratio is slightly below one, but as I mentioned, we have a lot of projects in the pipe, and we are pretty confident that we will recover above one over 2015.
Okay, and I guess just to go at Bert's question a different way, when you're looking at 15 in the context of the guidance provided, is infrastructure and construction, is that running at a negative EBIT? In your forecast, and mining, is that negative too?
We said in the remarks that we were negative in infrastructure, but we're not negative in mining.
Okay. And the issue there is it's, I guess, low margin projects, and it sounds more like a utilization issue, Bob. Is that the case right now, given where the backlog is?
For mining or?
No, sorry, for infrastructure.
For infrastructure, it's working off, it's still working off some zero calorie, as you might call it, backlog. So you have to pay for all of the systems and people and things to do that. And then replacing, you've got marketing costs to replace that. We're optimistic about that. And then when you replace it, it's getting the margin in from the replacement. That's why I said that, you know, if we do get some good news in the near future, that would be more of a 2016 thing where you see it actually impact the bottom line in 2015.
Okay. And on winning new business, I mean, obviously the headlines 2 weeks ago with the charges. Firstly, how surprising was that to you vis-a-vis your expectations, say 6 months ago, that unfolded the way it did? And any client feedback that you're getting, more inquiries or any anything pointing to clients being a bit more gun shy towards hiring you given the news that's out there?
Well, on the latter, we haven't seen it yet. In fact, I've been really grateful for the tremendous support we've got from many of our key clients calling and saying, how can we help? So that's been terrific. In terms of the process, of course we'd rather have achieved a different outcome, but what happened is the process in Canada. We had done our very best to have a different process, and we're still going to do our very best to have a different process. That's my day and night focus. So never give up is my motto, and I'm confident that we're going to get there. So that's what we're up to.
And your preferred method of getting there is, I mean, what's the end result? A settlement, or the thing goes to court in a few years, or how do you see it?
Well, obviously, I mean, the way that the Canada's economic peers handle this is they settle it with various conditions that, in the opinion of those governments, you know, create the solution they're looking for between sending the right public policy message and protecting their economy and innocent bystanders. So, you know, we'd certainly hope that Canada would get into a position like that. We'll continue to fight this vigorously until we achieve something like that. So that's our position.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Benoit Poirier from Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just to come back on the Highway 407, obviously when we look at the net income, it was down in the quarter year over year. So I was wondering if you could provide any color on the weaker performance and whether it could impact valuation.
I'm sorry, we can't disclose the 407 prospects.
Sorry, I just want to clarify, Benoit. Are you saying that the net income from Iowa 407 in 14 was actually 7% higher than 13?
So yeah, I'm looking specifically in the fourth quarter. It seems that the net income.
You got to look at it at the over the year. So they gave us
dividends are chunky. This is not a.
Okay, there was anything specific or negative during the quarter, right?
No.
No.
And also, 407 has announced their Q1 dividend, which is actually a 7% over Q1 last year, so that's pretty good.
Okay. Thanks. Second question, just in terms of water and environmental, you mentioned insufficient gross margin. So I would suspect it's more a matter of volume. And so given the cash proceeds that you might use from, you might receive from the 407, how should we be thinking about doing an acquisition versus some share buyback given where your stock is right now?
Well, certainly the stock is a heck of a deal right now. But as I said earlier, we look at all these factors and the best way to create long-term value for the company and shareholders. So I can't can't give you any more color on that. I'm sorry right now, but no alternative has been excluded from consideration.
Okay. And, Jesse, it seems that there's a lot of potential opportunities for you this year, especially when we look at the size of Eglinton to Champlain Bridge. So what are you assuming right now in your 2015 outlook? And assuming you're not successful, should we assume further restructuring or further layoff?
Well, we're currently not planning any major further activity in 2015. As I said, we think we're really well positioned for some of these projects coming up in the near term, so we're optimistic about them. But again, should we be successful, it takes some time to ramp up. So there's not much in our, as Len Pierre said, there's not much in our guidance one way or the other for these projects.
Okay, thanks.
We will now take our next question from Frederic Bastien from Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if there were any outstanding issues or milestones that you needed to hit in respect to the Kemp's integration, or is it fully behind you now?
It's done. It has been since before the holidays, actually. It was a spectacular, if I might say so, process, thanks to the REW and the Kent's team, and the corporate functions did a great job, and it's business as usual.
Okay. Next one may be a little bit more touchy, but I was wondering if you could please comment on your employee retention rates in Quebec, in Canada and abroad. I mean, are you seeing any changing trends? Is it improving? Is it deteriorating? And if it is deteriorating, what have you been doing to improve that? Thank you.
So I have comp stats from the end of the year, and our voluntary employee turnover was right at peer group average. And it has been essentially that since I joined, which says a lot about the dedication and loyalty of our employees. So we're very, very much appreciate that. We haven't seen any change in that this year, and so far I think the employee reaction that I've seen to the announcements a couple weeks ago have been of determined hostility. We're going to go take care of this issue, and we're going to go on and become a terrific ENC firm.
Thanks. And is this level of support, are you seeing that across the organization and across the regions?
Yes, and I mean, because obviously Quebec is more impacted by this than anywhere else. So, the further you get out, over the horizon, the less these issues matter to the employees.
Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Leon Agazarian from the National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just following up on Kent's again, you just mentioned that the integration has been completed, and I believe in the prepared remarks you mentioned that the synergies were at $70 million, which exceeded your $50 million target. Can you just comment a little bit on how that was achieved and what was, I guess, discovered or what really occurred there to lead to such a better number than expected?
Len Pierre, it was a financial number.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So you're right. We announced $50 million and we deliver 70. 50 are EBIT level and 20 in the finance income level. How we deal with that, most of the synergies are coming from, let's say, rationalization of our organization. As you know, Kent has been delisted, for instance, so the board is up here. A lot of, let's say, general expenses related to that disappear. After that, we combine a certain number of offices all over the world in order to rationalize our geographical implementation, and these disappear and so on. In terms of finance, we organize the cash pooling, just to illustrate my explanations. It means that now, for instance, when we issue LCs, all camps, as all other departments, are benefiting of our global negotiation with the volume effect you can imagine. We reimbursed 100% of all the debt of camps, okay, and we refinance on our own, and you have seen that we have sufficient cash to finance that on our own. We don't draw our facilities at this moment. So all in all, through this optimization in terms of cash, optimization in terms of tax organization, optimization in terms of insurance also, we integrate camps over our insurance umbrella, and all the rationalization of our organization, combination of offices, regrouping of a team all over the different countries we are working in, we deliver that as announced, and we deliver more.
Okay, great. My second question is regarding the $106 million in cost reforecast that was incurred for the hospitals and the mass transit. Can you give us a little bit more color on what happened there specifically and if you're going to see any impacts on that in 2015?
Let's say the most important explanation is coming from Saint-Justin and the hospital, the last difficult legacy project. So we review completely the action plans, we fix the issues, and we estimate that we are in a very, very good position to deliver this project and to have it under full control.
So there won't be any further reforecast going forward, then, that's been taken care of?
Let's say, as a CFO, is my dream, is my wish. Now, be pragmatical. We do all, now we have a new team in, okay? We have Jan Edwards joining Infrastructure Construction Department. He's certainly one of the top guys in these sectors. He's really, this action plan, new action plan, is really the consequences of his personal involvement. We support all the department functions, support infrastructure construction in order, let's say, to put this risk under control and to be able to deliver within the envelope we fixed, and we are reasonably confident in achieving that.
Yeah, we expect a much more stable 2015 than 2014 and 13, but risk remains and these projects even after they're done with the initial construction.
Okay, and just a final one for me would be on the work that you've done on the SG&A reduction. I know there's some restructuring as well that's still ongoing, but I mean, excluding that, do you see any further improvements, or can we assume that that's the run rate now that we can assume going forward on that?
Yeah, obviously. So first, we maintain the pressure in order, let's say, to streamline our organization and to avoid, let's say, non-control expenses in this domain. And this domain is a lot of things, starting by travels, costs, all these type of expenses are really under control. After that, you imagine that we decide this value-up program late in 2013, so we start to implement the actions over 2014. We get this result. We launch the restructuring plan late in the Q4 2014, and we are expecting the full effect of the actions we take in 2014 in 2015. On top of that, we'll have the full effect of the restructuring plan. So we are pretty confident that the trend in terms of optimizing our fixed cost basis will continue.
Yeah.
Now we have to absorb additional dimension of our group, CAMS, okay, and CAMS is a very, let's say, pay a lot of attention how they manage the DNA, so we are completely in line in this, the philosophy we have to develop to put this this type of cost under control. So we are pretty confident in our capability to stay at the, let's say, and to be maybe better than the average of our peers.
Thank you. I'll turn it over.
There are no further questions at this time. You may continue.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. If you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to call me. Have a good night. Bye-bye, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you. Have a good day.